In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Well, hello, and welcome to another edition of Android Faithful, your weekly source for news, hardware, apps, generative AI, LLMs, everything under the sun in the world of Android. I am Ron Richards, and with me as always...
And Jason Howell, and...
Wind Wetdow.
And...
Michelle Roman.
Hey, gang, we're back. It's been a busy week. It's been a wild week. It's been
super busy.
A roller coaster of a week.
Kind of exhausted, and it's only Tuesday.
I know. This is the
one of those kind of busy weeks.
Android Faithful number 31, our 31st episode, big milestone. We a month worth of shows.
Everyone likes a number that you can't, that is non-divisible by any other number.
Exactly.
Any other
It's prime. Prime time.
Exactly.
Yeah. Prime time.
It's always fun.
It's always major when it's a 31.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's true.
But
that was a good age.
But before we get into the news and all the exciting stuff, because we have a packed show tonight for you with a ton of news, ton of stuff going on, some fun hardware stuff. I've got on hand here the OnePlus 12 and OnePlus 12R. We're going to take a look at those. I have not opened the boxes yet, so we're going to do that live together.
Within a box.
But real quickly, just want to, out of the gate, want to remind everybody and thank you for supporting us over at patreon.com/AndroidFaithful. That's where, if you like the show, if you like what you're hearing, if you like what you're seeing, if you like anything we do, that's where you can go to show your support. And folks who sign up get access to our exclusive Discord. You get access to an ad-free audio feed of the podcast. No ads at all, the way that everybody likes it. And if you sign up at one of the higher tiers, you actually get a t-shirt with our logo on it, which is pretty cool. So thank you to everybody. And later in the show, we're going to thank some patrons specifically, as well as share a news article that the patrons picked for us to talk about. So very excited for that. All right. So with that, should we get into the news? Should we just get right to? Is there any other business to speak of before we start?
No business.
No business.
It's just party.
Just party. Okay.
It's just party today.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what, because there ain't no party like a Gemini party. That's for sure. Or a farewell party for Bard. Or duet. Or what is seeming like farewell assistant. Which seems the way that it's going. There it is. There's Taps. Although they haven't officially called it for assistant yet, haven't they? They haven't said assistant is dead, right?
We need like a Taps remix, like an EDM remix of Taps. Kind of signal. Yeah, like kind of more, yeah. There we go.
Well, so in between shows, of course, Google doesn't do it when we could talk about it on the day of Tuesday. But after last week's show, Google rolled out Gemini. The new app for Android was released, along with news that Gemini Ultra 1.0 was out for everyone to try. And let me tell you, from the moment they released the Gemini app, it has truly been a roller coaster as we discovered what this meant. The app replaces the default assistant operation once installed. That's very important to note. Assistant was left intact for non-smartphones, though. The new Google app beta has a string that says Gemini mobile app is working on expanding availability to make it accessible on your headphones, which is interesting. And you can, you know, we can guarantee that it's coming to other places too eventually. For me, the biggest thing, the biggest roller coaster I had with it was that I immediately installed the Gemini app, and then I looked on my phone and I had two Gemini icons because they changed the assistant icon to the Gemini icon and changed the word to Gemini. And it was just very, very confusing. And then what we also found out was when you invoked the wake word, when you said OKG, it pulls up Gemini, not assistant. Which then had me panic that none of my home automation stuff would work. And I immediately uninstalled the Gemini app. So that was my roller coaster. Wow. That was my journey.
Right? You're like, I'm out of here.
I'm out.
That's what every dev wants to hear on their release.
That's kind of like the worst case scenario.
It was
right
so
there.
Confusing. It was so confusing. And it just and the thing also was that when they rolled this out last week, it rolled out in the United States, but not internationally. And that didn't happen until yesterday, right? Where it's available in more regions. Like, I don't know about you. Was this rollout as smooth as it could have been? What do you guys think?
No, so one thing I was kind of curious about is why did Google announce this on Thursday only to like have it be made available in a bunch of other countries and regions on Monday? Like, it's now available in a lot more areas than it was on Thursday when they first announced it. And my initial thought was maybe they're announcing it on Thursday because they want to do a big splash, a huge media campaign around the Super Bowl, right? That would make sense.
Sure,
but then I mean, I didn't watch the Super Bowl, but I asked like people like, was there a Gemini ad? And apparently there wasn't. So I feel like that was a big missed opportunity right there.
It's very perplexing. This is very perplexing. The whole thing is perplexing. Jason, did you install the Gemini app? I've been calling it Gemini, everybody, just so you know. Gemini app?
You just like to be different, Ron.
I did not. Although Gemini. I think my husband did, and then he complained that Assistant doesn't work anymore.
But Assistant didn't work before.
A couple of things in its defense, and Michelle and I talked about this during the week, was that my lack of ignorance did not go further and go surface deep to realize that my stuff in Google Assistant and the Google Home setup would still work under Gemini. Like if I said OKG and Gemini came out and said, you know, turn on the lights, whatever, that still works. But there was a list of stuff that doesn't work, and I don't have it handy. I should find it. Or Michelle, you may have it. But
things like adding stuff, adding reminders.
That's the one.
Or like adding events to calendars. Those are the two of the biggest ones. Yeah. Like Google said they're working on those, but there's other stuff that aren't available. For me personally, like the only thing I really cared about was home control, and that's there.
Yep.
Other than that, like I don't really like set alarms on my phone. I have a Google Home smart speaker, smart display that I use for setting alarms and things like that. And all the other stuff I don't really use, like routines on my phone.
I just found the list here. So when you have this is according to Android Police, and I don't know, Jason, I'll give you this link if you want to show it up on the screen for our video viewers or not. But sure. There it is. It's in our chat. So when you have Gemini turned on, so media service providers, podcasts, news and radio stations, and third-party music providers aren't currently supported in Gemini. Routines, so starting a routine in Gemini isn't supported. So shortcuts to start a routine and routines attached to alarms and a clock no longer work. You can still start a routine with Google Assistant on home devices, like if you have like a Google Home Nest Hub or whatever like I have. Reminders... like Michelle, you mentioned, reminders don't exist in Gemini, and interpreter mode. If you use interpreter mode, that doesn't exist in Gemini, but it does exist in Assistant. So it's not feature it's not feature. There's no feature parity on Gemini and Assistant. Like Gemini isn't truly an assistant replacement in my mind. And also the rollout just see like explain what's happening. Like when you've installed Assistant on so many people's phones and so many of the operating system, Gemini will replace Assistant. Like I just feel as if they could have migrated us a little smoother here in this rollout and this go to market plan.
It's not like Assistant was this fly by night, you know, random thing that Google, you know, it was playing around with and then decided to pivot away from. It's been a very pivotal and major part of Google's strategy for the last handful of years when it comes to mobile. So I would absolutely agree. At the same time, like I installed the app and I was trying, you know, sometimes with these AI services, I'm like you, Ron, like you were saying, like, what the heck do I use it for? What do I search for? Sometimes I have to like really kind of, you know, kind of coax myself into figuring out a good test or good reason to use it. But I have a trip coming up next week. I'm going to Park City with the family. We're going snowboarding, skiing and stuff for the entire week. And I thought, oh, wait a minute. Gemini taps into my Gmail. It taps into my Google Docs. It taps into all these different things. What would it give me if I just asked it? I said, what did I say? Find the email that lists my Park City trip details for next week. And it said, I found several emails about your Park City trip next week, February 18th through 24th. Here are some of the details. And then it gives the address of where we're staying. It gives the check-in time, the check-out time, gives the, you know, there are 6 adults and 6 children in your group.
You know,
and then it said, the cost of the house is this and has already been split amongst the 4 families. The Howells have owed this much, the, you know, and then it goes through everybody. And these are all from disparate places. Like some of this is from a doc that I was like keeping to kind of catalog some information. Some of this is from email. So it's real. So I thought that was a pretty, and it also came back with the Wi-Fi network for the Airbnb that we're staying.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Now,
so random, but it's still kind of neat.
What that sounds like, Jason, is that sounds like all the questions I ask my wife that I don't get the answers to. We're like, wait a minute, what? How much was the thing again? And like,
Gemini
I don't know.
Is your new wife. Yeah.
So that is
there we go. Gemini is your new spouse.
Yeah.
I think part of the importance of this launch is that this is the highest profile, like the most accessible way to access a chatbot compared to ChatGPT, Copilot, et cetera. Like Microsoft is trying really hard to put Copilot in front of you, like on the search bar on Windows that barely anyone uses, the widgets interface that barely anyone uses on Windows, and like on Microsoft Edge, you know, like they're pushing it really hard. But here, Google is putting it in place of Google Assistant on Android phones, and it's accessible from a long press of the power button, from a swipe up on your gesture bar, from all the previous ways you could use Assistant on your Android phone. And by integrating it with the default Assistant, you can even say, hey, G, to invoke it. Like, it's so much more convenient to talk to and use Gemini than it is other large language models on Android.
Yeah.
And most people are using their devices. Like, they're not going to openai.com, whatever the website is for ChatGPT, to talk to it. Like,
yeah.
And most people aren't using Bing, so they're not using ChatGPT through Bing either, right? So, like, this gives Google, I think, like a huge leg up in terms of getting their product in front of
totally agree. But again, I go back to that you've trained those users for years on Assistant, and then you in one hand swiped it away, and like, did they is the wake word? Hey, Gemini.
They work.
Does it work? Or?
No. The wake word hasn't changed. Right. That it would be impossible for them to change just like overnight. They'd have to work with manufacturers,
right?
Train it on the hot word, and like that would be really complicated for them to do.
Exactly.
Yeah, a huge endeavor.
But I just real quickly, and then we'll move on. The quick mention about the note about it being made accessible to headphones makes it very, very interesting, where then it's like it's in your ear, basically, and you can talk to it and get answers back and that sort of thing. That's what some of the speculation is around the headphone aspect of it. But then a late addition right before the show, actually, friend of the show, Mr. Burke, who I believe is watching live in the chat because he's fantastic, he shared with me this little bit of tidbit news that came via The Verge, was that, so for example, ChatGPT, your chat log with ChatGPT when you're doing it, they keep that for 30 days. Gemini keeps it up for 3 years. So, you know, and so it says, you know, conversations that have been reviewed or annotated by human reviewers and related data, et cetera, are not deleted when you delete your app's activity because they're kept separately and not connected to your Google account. Instead, they're retained for up to 3 years. So all you're talking to Gemini is going into a Google storage system outside of your personal stuff for up to 3 years. And I got to imagine that has to do with training the module and the learning module and all that sort of stuff, that that's part of the larger thing of it. But like, that's, you know, 3 years is bananas. So I guess that's the price we're paying for the extra years of updates on our Pixel phones.
This whole thing is a mess, y'all. I don't think I've ever worked on a team on a product where it rolls out like this, where you're replacing something wholesale. And like, I mean, most users are not us, like are not faithful. They're just regular people that don't pay attention to all this. And then you change something on them. Most of the time when you're a software software producing company, there's blowback from this. But I can't help but feel, because it's Google and because it's Google and they can do whatever they want, and they'll probably not get too much of it. I mean, the long game of AI and LLMs aside, you're still going to try to make this work, even if it's nasty. I mean, the fact that they were like, we promised to fix all the parity and things just really quickly is not something that generally happens a lot in software development. I mean, it does at bad companies. So this is kind of astonishing to me. But again, it's Google. They have this like privilege of like scope and demographics.
Yeah,
it's real weird. I'm just cringing over here, but I mean, I'm going to end up using it.
I mean, I was critical of their go-to-market strategy, but I will defend them in this moment, is that it does require you to download the app and say, yes, I want it. So fair. Presumably, it's not as if like they did an auto app update to Assistant and change it to Gemini and put, you know, it's not like YouTube put their songs on iPods.
Yeah.
Right? You know, so at least there's some self-user voluntary thing that's happening.
Yeah. It's just usually like with most of the rest of us, a first impression is really important unless you're Google. And then you get multiple first impressions.
I will say the one thing I would like from Gemini is the fact that, I don't know about you guys, but how many Google accounts do you have?
Oh, too many.
Right.
Oh, yeah, so many.
So like, Jason, your example of going to my email, my Google One account that I have Gemini linked to is not my primary email account. So I would love to tell Google that, hey, this cluster of accounts are all me, and put them into my LLM and give me results of all that. You know, that would be something that would be convenient for me. Otherwise, I got to do the account switcher and make sure I'm in this account to ask Gemini to go look for an email. Like,
that would be cool. Be really cool. Yeah.
We'll see. Hopefully. Hey, I'm rooting for him. I'm rooting for him. You know.
Yeah.
I just want to say real quick correction, because Cousin of Ja put into the Twitch chat that the Google Docs integration was actually coming soon. And I think you're actually right on that. So it's probably my misunderstanding of those results, because I thought that it was going to Gmail and Docs, and that information was only in Docs, but apparently it's in Gmail too. So I'm guessing those results all came from Gmail. But definitely from multiple emails, not a single email. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So thank you for the correction.
All right. Well, so this is the Gemini. We're in the age of Gemini. So this is a moment in time that we got to mark. What was Thursday's date? February 8th, 2024 was a new age of the Google chapter. So
then 7 years from now, Google will destroy Gemini and make room for whatever the next thing is.
So, right on.
Or maybe sooner. Actually, who are we kidding? Sooner.
All right. But to move from one roller coaster to another, Michelle, what roller coaster are you about to get on?
So Android 15, like I said last week, is coming soon. Very, very soon. In fact, it could be this week, according to a finding from 9to5 Google. Sorry, Jason, I'm shuffling it around just because it just flows better. So according to a comment left by a Googler on the Android open source project, Android 15 could be landing as soon as this Thursday, which is in line with the release dates that they've been following for the previous Android developer previews. So that means Android 15 Developer Preview 1 on Thursday, and then Developer Preview 2, Developer Preview 3 maybe, and then the betas in Google I.O. and beyond. So this developer preview, we don't know exactly what Google will be announcing and releasing as part of it, but we do know it's going to be intended only for developers, so manually installation will be supported only. You won't be able to sign up for a beta program and then have it rolled out to your device. And likely, it'll only be available for Pixel devices. If you're using a non-Pixel Android device, you'll have to wait for the beta program to be getting access to it. And if you're wondering what new features and APIs and whatever other changes that'll be available in Android 15, there's a whole bunch that I've already talked about on previous shows, and there are some more that I talked about in the week since the last show that I'm going to be talking about now. For example, when I was digging through the latest Android 14 QPR beta, and I know that's going to sound confusing, like, hey, why are there Android 15 features in the Android 14 beta program? That's because of the way that Google is developing Android 14 QPR program and the Android 15 release simultaneously. So like there's like a mix and match between what features will appear in one branch and what features will appear in another branch. And actually, those are all merged. It's a bit complicated, but basically, I am assuming and very likely am correct that these features that I found will be intended to launch in Android 15. And the first one is a new easy preset mode that should make your phone much simpler in terms of readability and navigation. And it's very likely this is intended for helping your grandma or anyone who has visual impairments use their phone much easier. Because like right now, Android has a ton of options and features and settings like all loaded around. But most people just need like a couple of home screen icons. They need really big text. They need bold text. They need very prominent icons. And it looks like this new easy preset mode will just flip all those settings on and make it much easier for someone who's just not as technologically savvy as those of you listening to this podcast might be. And many OEMs like Samsung, Xiaomi, etc., they have their own similar feature like this. But this looks like it's going to be Google's native version of this feature that'll be integrated with the Pixel launcher, and it'll be coming to Pixel phones. But I'm assuming like other OEMs that don't have a feature like this already could be building on top of it. Another feature that could be coming in Android 15 or maybe one of the quarterly platform releases of Android 14 that I just talked about is a feature for the Pixel Fold that will allow you to continue apps once you close the device by folding it. So right now you have a Pixel Fold. When you're watching a full screen video or in a full screen game, if you fold the device, most apps won't transition from the inner screen to the outer screen. But with this new setting that Google is working on, there'll be a option in the settings page that'll allow you to enable a swipe up to continue feature. So that when you have an app open on the inner screen, then you close and fold your device, you can swipe up on the lock screen to continue using it on the cover screen. And those of you who have tried the OnePlus Open may be familiar with a similar setting that's available on that device, and it looks like Google is basically borrowing or implementing that feature into their version of Android for the Pixel Fold. The next one that I discovered is a feature that's very likely intended to be Pixel exclusive. It's a adaptive touch mode, and this setting seems to allow you to automatically adjust the touch sensitivity based on the environment or activities or the whether or not a screen protector is enabled. And it's not exactly clear, it's not defined in the code what environment or activities refers to, but it could be things like rain. So if you ever tried to use your phone when it's wet, you know that the touch sensitivity is really wonky. You like basically can't use it at all, and it looks like this adaptive touch mode might detect those kind of conditions, like when it's wet or when you have a screen protector on, and then automatically adjust the touch sensitivity so that you can actually use your phone. And then the next one is a revamped chat bubbles experience that's intended for large screen devices like the Pixel tablet. So this bubbles feature was introduced into Android with Android 11, and there are a couple apps that use it, like the Google Messages app, Telegram, and I think Signal also uses it. And this feature, this experience, has not really looked that great on tablets because a lot of times these bubbles are hanging to the left or the right edge. But if you use a wide tablet, it's kind of hard to reach your thumb on the left or right edge, wherever the bubble might be. Instead, this new bubble bar experience would be pinned to the bottom right screen side of the screen where the taskbar is, and then you can swipe up to open the bubble bar and then switch between active bubbles that are available, you know, for whatever app you're using. Right now, as I mentioned, like, not every messaging app supports this, but if you do use chat apps that support the Bubbles API, this will be a welcome experience and update to the experience in Android 15, most likely, for tablets.
Before we move on, just real quick, show of hands, who activates Bubbles and who doesn't? Activates Bubbles.
On purpose? No. Wait, hold on. On purpose or not? Okay.
I suppose on purpose. Yeah. Who makes sure that the bubbles are on?
I make sure the bubbles are off.
Same.
Fact. Yeah, exactly. That's that might be a generational thing, because Michelle looks like you're pro bubble.
Michelle's the outlier.
You're pro bubble.
I only use it for like high priority contacts in certain chat apps. Oh, like people that I want to reply to immediately.
Here's a question, Michelle. Yeah. Are any of the three of us a high priority chat?
Oh, don't ask for that. No.
Not to put you on the spot.
Well, I'll say that Discord, none of the apps that I talk to y'all in support Bubbles. So that's my cop-out answer.
There we go. Excellent. Excellent answer, sir.
That was a close one. Bullet there, sir.
Okay, sorry. And you need to derail.
The last feature is something that is technically already rolling out in the Android 14 QPR betas, and it's this new feature that seems to protect you from phishing attempts within apps. And I believe the name of it is, if you open your phone in the Android 14 QPR beta and you go into the security settings, you might notice this new scanning for deceptive apps settings page. And it looks like this settings page or this feature will detect when, suspicious-looking apps try to show a pop-up asking for your username and password. And it's not exactly clear what Google is going to be doing with this feature and how it detects whether or not an app is suspiciously asking for a username and password and how it differentiates between that from a legitimate app. But this settings page suggests that, you know, Google is trying to add a built-in anti-phishing protection feature into Android 15. Hopefully they share more details soon once the developer preview is up. But this feature, if you have the QPR beta already installed on your device, can be found under settings.
All right.
And that was like the five posts that I made last week about QPR and Android 15 related stuff. And I have even more that I want to do before Thursday that I didn't get a chance to do. So stay tuned for those.
All right. And we can discuss those next week as we go into it. But it looks like Android 15 is imminent, isn't it?
Yeah. Feels like it. It's in the air.
Yeah.
You smell that?
Well, hey, it is. Wait a minute, though.
Huh?
Wait, when is it coming, Michelle? Is it coming this week? It's coming Thursday?
Thursday.
The 15th?
Yet again. Yep.
Android 15 on the 15th.
Oh, what a coincidence.
Is someone weird at Google being clever, or is that just happenstance? So we'll see.
A little of this, a little of that, maybe. Yeah, it's like, oh, we're going to release it on Tuesday. Let's just hold it 2 days and do it on the 15th.
Let's do it on the 15th. Why not?
Those people that do those Android shows, they'll love that. They're going to run with that one.
Oh, man. My word.
All right.
All righty. Well, so it's been a while since we've heard from the beeper drama. Melodrama, telenovela.
Telenovela, yeah.
Yeah. Do you have any? Have you heard anything on the latest there?
Yeah, there's something interesting happens. So recently there was the State of the Net conference, which is basically a kind of lecture conference series hosted by a nonprofit that's basically for the public and for policymakers to kind of talk about, you know, things related to decentralized global internet, communications, commerce, and democracy. And one of the Federal Communications Commission, the FCC, there's five commissioners. One of those commissioners, Brendan Carr, recently spoke at this conference. And Mr. Carr basically said that the FCC should look into whether the shutdown of Beeper Mini by Apple complies with one of the FCC's rules. And this rule is called Part 14. And it has a lot to do with accommodating users with disabilities. It actually comes from this like landmark disability law called the CVAA, the Communications and Video Accessibility Act. And I mean, Carr goes kind of into depth about it, but basically it's kind of tapping into that same zeitgeist that we keep hearing about and have heard about over the winter of keeping or getting these kind of large companies, you know, accountable for anti-competitive practices. And Carr comes at it from a very, you know, slightly different take. and kind of tries to use some of like the FCC's, you know, current rules in the books as, you know, kind of justification for it. And so this law that he talks about actually states in it that, quote, covered providers shall not install network features, functions, or capabilities that impede accessibility or usability. And so Mr. Carr really talked about the accessibility and usability kind of aspects of us and stating kind of inciting basically things like to a tiny extent, you know, whether the blue and green is accessible or not, but really the idea that because, you know, Apple degrades the experience or, you know, degrades certain things like, you know, photo and video and certain parts of the communication experience between iOS and Android users, he wanted to just basically have the FCC look into whether this kind of runs afoul of these rules. And there's a lot, I mean, I didn't actually go ahead and read Rule 14 of the SEC like in detail, but it was really interesting because he specifically said that he wanted to, you know, have the FCC uphold these rules in the effort to encourage accessibility and usability and basically just relate Apple's business practices to these things. And like, he kind of gave this like, little bit of a caveat that, you know, a lot of these rules with the FCC kind of came about like back in, you know, back when ISPs were like the big baddies and kind of talking about VoIP services. But, you know, he's kind of trying to like basically encourage the FCC to kind of look forward and to look into these rules and look into Apple's behaviors in the context of this, which I thought was really interesting, mostly because I had a usability. Like, I really can't argue with most people, myself, about, you know, yeah, Apple has the right to do whatever they want with their own services, sure. But actually, it's kind of funny because as I was reading this article, I had my very first, like, for the first time ever, had an iPhone user send me a video. And so I know this is old hat. I know to Ron, this is super old hat.
I can't believe it's 2024 and this hasn't happened to you yet.
Yeah. Like, it hasn't happened to me. It happened to me the other day. I was taking a Legree class, which is like, to put it bluntly, Legree on steroids. And my instructor took a video for me because it was like really awesome. And she sent it to me. And it was the most potato video I've ever seen in my life. I was like all being all Instagram-y, excited to show it. And it was like really jarring to me. It was like, oh, I mean, like, I think from a philosophical standpoint, I've really been angry for people, but this is the first time I've been angry for myself. Yeah. And so I do think that there is something to be said here about accessibility and usability. And the FCC in the speech was all about, you know, interconnectedness and compatibility. And so I just think it's a very interesting take on how you could maybe hold Apple to some account for this behavior going at it from this tack. I mean, this is just one commissioner at the FCC suggesting it. But yeah, brought the beeper thing back up. And he's trying to like also kind of spread it, you know, kind of like also anticipate like what's going to go on with AI and AR and VR. And basically just saying, hey, like more or less like our rules have been about ISPs. But these days, the things and the entities that threaten, you know, competitive, you know, a good, robust competition in the market aren't ISPs anymore. It's, he said, on the edge, and I can only imagine he's talking about kind of edge cases that they didn't expect, like, you know, Apple and stuff. So anyway, someone else invoking the name of Beeper Mini, and I personally think kind of very interesting perspective. And so we'll just see if this comes to anything. It might come to nothing, but hey, it's Beeper. We get to talk about Beeper Mini again for just a second and think about, you know, I don't know. But yeah, it was really funny. Potato videos. I don't know how you've dealt with this for years, Ron. It was awful.
I don't know how you haven't received any of these videos up until now. That blows me away.
All of my friends and family are like engineers or their parents that have asked us to buy them phones. So everybody's been Android.
That's fascinating. It's 2024 this just happened to you the first time. Because it's to the point now where I see a video come through on messages and I just know I'm not going to be able to view it because of this reason.
Someone with an iPhone sends you something that like you want to keep forever, or you would normally want to add to your photo roll or your video, you know, story. You wouldn't even do it with that.
I tell people send me stuff via Facebook Messenger that I know I'm on Facebook. I'm like, at least some sort of data base, which is a good segue to actually one thing that we're talking about at WhatsApp, which is we're going to jump. This was originally going to be in the app section, but we figured let's talk about it now. So WhatsApp is changing to come in line with the EU's Digital Markets Act, which we've heard so much about, right? We've discussed and all that sort of stuff. And basically, it has to do with the interoperability with other messaging apps, right? And how WhatsApp interacts with other messaging apps. This is exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Meta wants to enable third-party chat apps to chat with WhatsApp users. So basically, imagine sending a WhatsApp user a message via Google Messages or iMessage, right? Which honestly is how everything should work.
Yeah.
But the question is, how do you do this while maintaining any integrity of security and privacy of the conversations? It's important to note that WhatsApp uses a Signal protocol, so other messaging platforms would have to use that to encrypt their messages. Like, the concept, and it's great to hear that WhatsApp wants to do this. Like, WhatsApp wants to be interoperable, but the questions that this is all going to bring up are just are. You know, there's so many, you know, about how they connect and how they maintain that encryption. We're dealing with the tech debt and a very big, you know, shoelace knot of trying to untangle the past 20 years of messaging. And I don't see it becoming clean anytime soon. So,
and probably everybody believing that their system is the right system.
Yep,
you know, their approach is the right approach. And if there needs to be any sort of give, it's not going to be from me, but you know, maybe at some point it will have to be, you know, but I don't know.
Yep.
Oh, and I will say that basically all my iPhone friends know to use WhatsApp with me. So I don't know.
Yep.
There you go.
All that training.
Bring it back around.
I actually saw that like WhatsApp is actually gaining popularity in the US.
It's great.
And that's definitely a good sign.
Yeah.
If you like interoperable messengers that are decent. And that might be the real reason why Apple is adding RCS support to the Apple Messages app, because they're afraid of WhatsApp.
Yeah.
Instead of, because they're certainly not being forced to do it.
Yeah, they're not afraid of the EU so much, so to speak. Quick note in the live chat here in the live stream, Cousin Ajah says, between this and Threads integrating with Mastodon and the Fediverse, Meta has been quietly and suspiciously doing the right thing, which is true. Meta's making a lot of good choices these days. I feel like they're a little bit of a sleeping giant. So we will see.
Wow. A giant, nonetheless.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah. But hey, got to do the right thing every now and again, tip the scales back in the balance sometime, I guess, maybe.
I like right things.
Yeah,
I like right things, too.
I like doing right things. And you know what? You all have been doing the right thing for us.
Oh, yeah.
And we appreciate it. Patreon.com/AndroidFaithful. Yes, we say it a lot during our show. But the reason that we do is because we appreciate you, because you support us directly and you enable us to do this show. And because you do this, we give you the ability to tell us what stories you want to hear sometimes. So our patron pick, news story pick of the week, we had this for a vote for our patrons. And it was between three different stories. At the bottom, with 21% of the votes, was OnePlus saying the OnePlus 12R has slower storage than was originally advertised. People were like, I don't care about that. And then at 28%, it was Samsung's fix for the Galaxy S24's dull display is a new slider. People sort of cared about that. But the one that people really cared about has to do with none other than YouTube Music.
I did not think this would win, by the way.
Yeah, it's kind of... Okay. Yeah. Basically, the cast sheet in YouTube Music is getting an overhaul. So, you know, the changes, I wouldn't say the changes are like major, but if you look close enough, you'll see. Like, here on the 9to5 article, they're comparing it against the iOS implementation on the left for video viewers. In the middle is the way it is now. And if you've casted from something like at YouTube Music to another device, it's like this overlay, this squared box that appears in the center with all of your destinations.
Looks old.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Remember, isn't it interesting with design how at one point it feels fresh and new and like, oh my goodness, they're so with the times. And then over time, it starts to look dull. And that's kind of what's happening here. You know, on the new version, they're rounding the edges, tightening up the list a little bit, giving you a suggested pool before showing some of the other destinations. With the kind of the overlay that allows you to change the volume of wherever you happen to be casting it to. I mean, on the old one, you actually got a little bit more context, right? You got the album cover, got a little play control on the new one. Yeah, but you just get a little slider.
But you don't need that though. Like the old one gave you more stuff, but it was redundant because that's exactly what was behind the modal.
Yeah.
Right. Like from a UI perspective. So like all you really need, you need this to be functional. Let me know where this is playing. I think this is a welcome change, and you know, and it's a little more the maturity as they of the YouTube Music app as they bring it up to where it should be to be what they want it to be. You know.
Yeah. So little design changes that you'll see if you're still using YouTube Music, which I am not really. Anyways, maybe you are patrons of the show.
I'm using it every day, by the way. It's my music app of choice, and I
okay. Do a couple of years late, you know, are you happy?
No,
where it's
no,
at?
I hate it. I think there's a direct correlation between my decline of enjoyment and involvement in music with the direction these apps have taken and all this. I definitely,
that's a bummer.
Yeah. I mean, it stinks. It's, I do it because I have to. The majority of the time I'm in there for my kids. So it's just, it's nonsense.
Yeah.
Anyway, and so,
well, that yeah. does so, change yeah, things but, for sure.
Yeah.
Suddenly all of your recommendations aren't even yours.
But even then I feel like Google Play Music, and it's really funny because I've been going through my basement. I've been cleaning out my basement and like going through old boxes of stuff. Cause I've still got boxes that I moved to San Francisco that I never opened from New York that then I moved back to New York that I never opened. And so I'm finding phone. I've got one day we'll do something, but I've got a stack of phones like this high and I'm plugging them in and seeing like what year they're from and what was on them. And like, I plugged one in that had Google Play Music and I got all excited because somehow Google Play Music recommended new music to me better and more effectively than YouTube Music does. YouTube Music can't seem to figure out the genres I like and therefore filter out the stuff I don't like when it's recommending new music. It is like YouTube Music for new music recommendations is like walking into the supermarket and there's just like everything at you at once, where what I want is, you know, I like these genres, you know, I like these bands, don't show me these bands that I don't like, right? Like, I don't understand how hard that can be. So, sorry.
And it's Google, right? Because you expect, if anything, this is Google's jam, is that kind of connection of data. Yeah. I mean, I use Tidal now just because Tidal and supporting artists and stuff, but I expect them to be not as good at recommendations, and they're like pretty meh, and they're not very good at like expanding out. Like, they basically recommend me the same damn 2 dozen songs given like the same starting point. It's just whatever. Yep. But it's like, I would expect, at least if anything, YouTube Music, if they can't get the UI right, could at least get that functionality, which is what Google should be good at. Good. That's disappointing. So I'm just going to stay over here at Tidal.
Indeed. Well, thank you, patrons, for your votes. Patreon.com/AndroidFaithful. And especially call out a few patrons out there. Robert F. Freimering from Alaska. Luke Fletcher from Australia. And Jennifer Hamill from Tennessee. That is just three of the many, many folks who support us on Patreon at patreon.com/AndroidFaithful. Thank you. We literally could not do this without you.
Nope. At all.
Literally.
At all. Thank literally. You so much. All right. So now let's go over to Hardware Town, where I've got two very red bricks of cardboard that I recently received containing the OnePlus 12 and the OnePlus 12R, or as Jason has affectionately started referring to it, the OnePlus 12R.
The 12er, the reviews, or the unboxing coming up next.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices
down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Yes, and so what we'll do with this unboxing here, where do you want to go first? Do you want to go 12 or 12R? What do we want to see first, everybody?
Do we go premium or do we go step down first and then now, work up to the premium?
I want to note here that I don't know what color these are. I have not looked at any of the back of this. All I know,
Ron, those boxes are red.
The boxes are red, but I don't know. Okay. In the phones inside, I don't know what colors they are. So, all right. Well, it looks like the first person in chat said the 12R. So we're going to start with the 12R.
The 12R.
Which, by the way, important to note that the 12R is now on sale today. In fact, if you're curious about it, it's $4.99 USD. You can get it at Amazon, get it at Best Buy. It goes on sale today. So if you're looking about getting the 12R, now's the day that you want to jump on it. You can get it on the OnePlus website as well, too.
Powered by Trinity Engine.
Yeah, interesting.
Why am I only now seeing Trinity Engine? What the heck does that mean?
Powered by Trinity Engine.
They've been talking about it since like the OxygenOS 14 update announcement. Okay. But as for your question, what the heck is it?
Yeah.
That's a whole different beast entirely because it's still not. There's a lot of jargon, marketing jargon involved there.
All right.
But TLDR, it's something that makes your phone feel fast.
Okay. Hey, we like to have our phone feel fast. That's pretty good. Yeah. So,
like that.
All right. So the OnePlus 12R, we're going to start with that. Comes in a very nice red box for our audio listeners with the big 12R on the front. Opening the box here, and we see the first thing you see is OnePlus's slogan, "Never Settle," as that's in the little packet here, which contains, I think, a cable and the manuals and stuff. Yeah, no, just the manuals. The welcome. Little welcome
all the
kit.
Print stuff that you never look
all
at.
All the fun stuff you never look at, because what you want to look at is underneath it, you want to look at the phone itself. Aww. So I'm going to pop the phone out here and take it out of its little paper protective sleeve.
Oh, so you are a slider, not a peeler.
Oh, yes.
Ooh.
So it looks like I got the color iron gray for the 12R. Here it is with a wonderful Hasselblad camera. Camera back in. I will say, it feels nice.
Yeah,
it doesn't. You would think the 12R being at $499 and more in the mid range. When the Pixel A line first came out and it felt plasticky, felt a little cheaper. This does not feel scrimped in the build quality whatsoever at all.
No, the texture even looks great on camera. Yeah. You can kind of tell it's not plasticky.
Not at all. It's just nice. You can hear me scratching it, but it's nice. nice feel for the body. It looks pretty good. This is the first time I've opened it, so I haven't powered it up yet. But I'm going to power it up. I'm going to put it through its paces, alongside its sister or brother, the 12, which I'll now unbox here. Don't know what color I got here. Same box, red box with a 12. The only difference is the lack of the R. Opening it up, you get, instead of a red Never Settle, you get a black Never Settle.
Ooh.
Little documentation kit. And then we see the phone there. It says OnePlus. We're going to take it out here. We're going to slide it out, Jason. I'm a slider.
A peeler. Sometimes peeling's fun.
There we go. And there it is.
There you go.
Oh, wow.
I got the black. I got the, what do they call it? They call it silky black.
Silky black.
Silky
black.
Silky
and
black.
And I got to say, holding the 12 next to the 12R, they don't feel different.
Yeah.
Like 12R feels a little lighter, right? It just feels a little lighter because it's a little smaller. It's got a little, but like they feel pretty good. So
nice. What about the texture on the back of the versus the non-er.
Honestly, they feel the same.
Are they about the same?
The texture feels the same. The phone the phone feel on these does feel the same, I will
OnePlus,
say.
What does the OnePlus call it? Subtle metal grains.
Yes. Yeah, it does. It does feel like it's got, you know, like you got some friction or like some texture. Like it's not too slippery. Remember, Jason, when we went through the slippery age of phones? Phones were sliding all over the place? Yeah. But I will say, like,
not only were they slippery, they were also rounded all over. So it was just like there was no holding on to those bad boys.
Oh, yeah, sliding right off coffee tables and junk.
But I will say, I like the camera bump, the Hasselblad, the big circle on the back, because again, it gives it, when you put the phone down, it lets it, you know, it avoids the sliding all over. It gives
it.
Well,
it does, but it's also off center. And that's what really bugs me. And actually, so I have been spending a lot of time with your Open, with the OnePlus Open for the last couple of weeks. I got it from you when I was in LA.
Yep.
And that's one of the things I really appreciate about it. Like, there is no doubt that this is, and the same on those phones, you know, the camera bump is gigantic, right? Like, they're not trying to hide it. It's huge. It protrudes. Like, it's a huge deal. But when it's centered, at least, I don't get that annoyance of it being on a table and wobbling. Like, I don't know. There's just a part of me that really bugs me when the phone's just like, even when it's standing still, like I've set it there and I walk away and I look over and it's like kind of teetering because it's off axis and stuff. I don't know. That just kind of bugs
teeter-totter kind of mode. Yeah. I will note the 12R camera unit doesn't have the H, the Hasselblad H for it. So it's a little, you know, a little bit lesser of a camera, camera setup. Yeah.
And the color enhancements and the
camera,
Hasselblad.
The camera unit itself, the circle itself is a bit smaller. Just looking at it from a physical standpoint, but yeah, so got the 12, got the 12R, going to put them through their paces. I'll talk about them a little more later in the show, but OnePlus also sent the wireless charger, which I was raving about when I saw, and as Michelle pointed out, is just the old wireless charger, but still, I'll take it, so, because I don't currently have a wireless charger, so I was
glad. Does it have a fan inside of it?
I picked that up. It does have a fan. So there's the fan.
I mean, it's doing 50 watt wireless charging. You definitely need a fan.
A fan. Yep. So, needs to circulate some air for sure.
We'll play with that. So so the OnePlus 12R is on sale now. You can go pick it up if you're looking for a good mid range. This is my review. This is just my first look at it because clearly you just watched me open the boxes here live on the show. But I'm hearing good things about the 12R and that it is like really. For a mid-range potential flagship killer, it might be the real thing. Michelle, I see you nodding.
Ron, there's one thing I wanted to ask you to test out. So apparently one feature they're advertising on the OnePlus 12 is called, quote, Aqua Touch. And it's basically OnePlus's version of that adaptive touch feature that Google seems to be working on for their Pixel phones. It like lets you use the OnePlus 12 while it's wet, which is a problem, as I mentioned, with a lot of other phones. So I'm curious if you ever get a chance, if you're ever using your phone out when it's raining.
I do. No,
see what the touch sensitivity is like and see if it's actually better on the OnePlus 12 than your other devices.
I literally ran into that today, Michelle, because I was out, shoveling snow. And there was a couple of times where, you know, it was melting, so it was dropping from the power lines above and stuff like that. And I'd get a big dollop on my phone, and then, like, it would go wonky. So I will definitely check that out and report back to you when I do the full review on the phone. So so OnePlus 12R, OnePlus 12, excited to get some hands-on time with them. OnePlus, I'm rooting for OnePlus these days. I will admit, I'm OnePlus-essence, as I've been saying. I think they're doing great stuff, and it's really exciting to be talking about them not as a punchline the way we used to years ago. So I think they're pushing the envelope, so it's just pretty cool. So.
Unsettled, desettled.
Yes. So. Very cool. All right.
Are you implying they ever settled? Isn't their tagline never settled?
That joke has been made on this show,
a little bit of a settle period there for a while.
It was a settle period, yeah.
They were settling.
Yeah.
They settled into a device that didn't have their signature alert switcher, you know. They caught back there. Mm-hmm. They unsettled again.
Yes. So OnePlus 12, OnePlus 12R, review to come. So there you go.
Nice. Excellent. I will say Saturday was Lunar New Year, so all the red boxes are very auspicious.
Or I took my kids to a Lunar New Year program at the library where they got to do like all these arts and crafts with dragons. And since then, my son's just been saying, Dragon of the Year. It's the dragon of the year. And so me and my wife are going, hooray, you're the dragon of the year.
That's adorable. Excellent. Yeah, so. Excellent, excellent.
Very cool. All right, what else we got in hardware? What's going on?
What's breaking?
What's breaking? The breaking is hopefully not Google's next foldable phone, because, you know, foldables tend to be significantly more fragile than regular slab phones. But we have a peek at what could be the Pixel Fold 2, because last week I got a tip from a source, an anonymous source, about a device, a photo they happened to get of the upcoming Pixel Fold 2, or what they say is the Pixel Fold 2.
Whoa.
And I found the source to be quite credible, and we talked about some of the rumors last week in terms of the processor and the RAM and the storage, but this week I got more hands-on information about the device, including, as I mentioned, a photo of the actual prototype. So what you're seeing on screen, if you're watching the video, is a photo of the alleged Pixel Fold 2. And based on what I know, it looks like Google might be making significant design changes with respect to the first generation. So the first generation was one of the widest foldable phones you could get. When you unfolded it, it was basically a tablet in landscape mode. And a lot of apps reacted accordingly. Like, you had apps like Gmail default to its tablet layout, Google Play Store tablet layout, every single Google app and every other Android app that had a tablet layout would use their tablet layout. But that Pixel Fold is quite unique in that regard, because most other Android foldables, when you unfold it, they open up into a portrait landscape layout, because they're taller than they were wider. So a lot of apps would default to their phone layout, and they would only show their tablet layout when you actually flipped it over. So this form factor is found on like the OnePlus Open or the Galaxy Z Fold 5. And while I don't know the exact aspect ratio of the Pixel Fold 2, just looking at the photo that I was sent, comparing it to the first generation Pixel Fold and what I was told by my source, it looks like the form factor is similar or closer to the OnePlus Open than the previous generation Pixel Fold. So it's a lot more square. It's not like a perfect square. You can tell if you're looking at the photo, but it's closer to a square than the rectangle that was the Pixel Fold 1. And that has some interesting implications in terms of like the app compatibility aspect. Maybe they're doing this because a lot of apps just weren't optimized yet for landscape mode and tablet devices. So they're like, basically Google is throwing in the towel saying, you know, we can't force developers to get with the times and support our devices and landscape and tablet mode, right? So while we're waiting on more apps to be, you know, compatible and natively supported with this aspect ratio, the compromise is to have the default portrait layout so that your apps look and behave as you might expect on a regular slab phone. And then maybe in a future generation, we might return to that really wide aspect ratio. Or this could be incorrect, because this photo that I was sent and the details that I were sent were of a device that's in the engineering validation test stage of the production process. And there's still a couple of steps left. There's still the DVT, the PVT device validation test, and the product validation test, and then mass production. But generally, like, once you're in this stage, like, the overall design is kind of finalized. There might be a couple things that might be changing, but I don't think this design will significantly change in terms of like the overall aspect ratio from where we are now, from where it'll launch. And as for when it'll launch, based on the rumor that I heard last week, in terms of the device upgrading to the Tensor G4 instead of the Tensor G3, it sounds like we might get a later launch this year. Instead of Google I/O, we might get a announcement in fall alongside the Pixel 9 series, just based on the fact that, you know, the Tensor G4 that is getting, you know, that hasn't been announced yet and would likely be saved for an announcement in the fall.
One thing I'm noticing when I look at this, and because I have the OnePlus Open, I doubt you can see it on the screen, is that with the Pixel Fold, they were squared off. The display was squared off, and you know, all the design elements were really squared. And actually, what you're seeing in the leak that you got a hold of is it's very similar to the rear design of the OnePlus Open. as far as that kind of like rounding with the barrier that, that, that goes between, like I'm looking at them side by side. And I'm like, wow, that is really similar. They're
yeah. You notice the corners are really rounded. And I do like that aspect because I think when I was using the OnePlus Open, I didn't really like how sharp the corners were. They're not anywhere near as sharp as the S24 Ultra that I'm currently using, but they are sharper than what it looks like on the Pixel Fold 2. And also the other thing that the elephant in the room that I didn't mention is the redesigned camera bar on the back of the Pixel Fold 2. Like, it doesn't look like any of the other current Pixels. Like it's not the giant edge-to-edge visor that all the other Pixels since the Pixel 6 have had. It's this squared-off camera module in the top left corner, and a lot of people are saying this is the iPhone-ification of the Pixel lineup. And I don't know if I quite agree. Like maybe I don't know why they might be ditching that camera bar design. It could be because they're making this device a bit narrower. They just don't have enough room to have that camera bar go edge to edge and fill it with all the camera sensors they want. So as you can see, there's if you're looking in the video feed, this camera island has two rows of camera sensors, two pills, right? And if you were to lay them side by side, it doesn't look like there's enough space.
Yeah, there's not enough length, right?
Not enough length on the back.
Yeah, or width or whatever it is. You can't go horizontally one line because it's not wide enough. Yeah. Yeah.
So. But I don't like the stacked look of the pills. I'm sorry. it looks like they were on the same line and then you shortened the margin and instead of them like shrinking, they just went, oh, I'll just put it down there. Yeah. You know
it's
what I mean?
Like it's awkward to me, but
it's a little awkward to me.
Yeah.
You're not going to lie.
To be fair, this is a blurry photo of a pre-production unit.
Yeah.
I'm hesitant to judge it based on this.
Yeah. Oh, I'll judge it. And hopefully they're judging it too. And they go, yeah, I don't like that either. But we'll see. But so many times these things happen this early in the stage and then we get it in hand and we're like, well, actually, it looks good. Yeah. So yeah, you can't really judge at this stage. But
I'm going to miss having a tablet when I open the phone. I mean, if I'm just going to have a portrait to square phone, I'm just going to back to Samsung, y'all. That's just it. Yeah.
But I don't know. Jason, open up the OnePlus Open. Like when it's open, it's a tablet. Like turn it around, Jason. When it's open on full display, it gives me when I played with it, I preferred it over the Pixel Fold because what I got in height, was worth more to me than what I lost in width. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, but I agree, but then I'm just going to go. I mean, I think when I say Z Fold, I would do that or OnePlus, but I liked having an actual full width tablet in my hand. That's kind of what was unique to me to go back to Pixel.
Yeah.
I get it. I totally get it, but I don't know. I like variety in my foldable choices.
Variety is the spice of life.
Yeah, the advantage of the Pixel Fold's super wide aspect ratio is that it actually makes side-by-side multitasking significantly better. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was hard to do on the Z Fold 5 just because it's so narrow.
Yeah.
And I tried it on the OnePlus Open. It is more doable on the OnePlus Open than on the Z Fold 5. But I'd imagine just because of how wide the Pixel Fold is, it's the best experience if you're having one app on the left side, one app on the right side.
Yeah, agreed. 100%. So, but I get it. Like the OnePlus Open just had so much almost universal praise. It makes sense for them to kind of move to what people like.
Yep.
Well, what about nothing? Nothing's over there. Like you're never talking about me. That's what Carl Pei was saying.
That's because they had nothing to talk about until now.
They've been real quiet ever since their messaging foray. Right when they tried to solve, it's been very very quiet.
Oh man, what an unfortunate moment.
What was that thing called again? I forgot. The name of the
Nothing Chat.
Nothing Chat. Yeah.
Powered by Sunbird.
That's what it was, right? Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
We're all just pretending that didn't happen. They're pretending it didn't happen.
If they'd been able to stick the landing, that would have been a big deal. So it was obviously a gamble, but that's a hard one. Anyways, Nothing is hoping to erase your memory of any of that stuff with a new phone coming March 5th called the Nothing Phone 2A. There's going to be an event on March 5th 6:30 a.m. Eastern, 3:30 a.m. Pacific, which is even too early for me. So I'm not going to be watching, but I'll watch afterwards. They're doing it as a part of a developer program, similar to what they did here in the U.S. with the Nothing Phone 1. We don't really know anything specific about it yet. No specs, no pics, no pricing. Carl Pei, in this like promo interview that they set up, does call out details on the device, sort of. He infers that the Nothing Phone 2, the actual Nothing Phone 2, is for those who want a premium experience, and that there are others who have different needs. So, you know, that tells you this is going to be somehow different. And then the 2A tells me, that's probably going to be a step down in some way, shape, or form. Not that it's bad, but, you know, like all the phones seem to have this in their catalog now. So, and then you can kind of see in this thumbnail, they had some kind of scribbles on a page at one point in the video, and it kind of shows a little bit of the sketches of the 2A. It shows a centered camera layout and then a redesigned kind of glyph pattern on the back, which actually confirms that a leak that was saying there would be no glyph was a nothing burger. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I did it. Speaking of the glyph, Nothing has announced its glyph developer kit. So any developers who want to develop for the glyph lighting systems on the Phone 1 and the Phone 2 can. There's a GitHub page with info, examples, tips for the setup, all that kind of stuff.
That sketch looks like a kind of very rudimentary drawing of a human digestive system.
It does. Yeah. Don't want to see where that comes out of the phone. The Nothing Phone 2. There we go. Is it a nothing burger? Will it be a nothing burger? I don't know. Well, remains to be seen. We'll see on March 5th. But I'm interested.
Yeah, I'm always curious what they're doing. I'm always curious what they're doing. And whenever they open up a dev program like inviting people to develop against what they're doing, like that's both like it's a little thirsty because it's like, hey, we want you to do stuff, but it's also like it's welcoming and it's opening. And if I was a developer, I'd be into it, you know. So yeah,
I mean, yeah. Well, as a developer, I suppose. Well, I guess I'm asking. When primarily you, and you, Michelle, probably know about this too. As a developer, you're probably, your alert system is open to opportunities like this, right? How do you make a decision to go, this is an opportunity that's worth my time versus not, right? Because if you do and it ends up popping and you're one of the first people, that can be a real big opportunity. And I don't know, I'm not saying that this is, but.
There's just not enough nothing phones out there to justify for any developer team, I imagine. I can't speak for anyone else, but I imagine that's going to be the case.
In the U.S.
And a lot of people who will do this are like, independent developers and enthusiasts.
Right.
Yeah, I would say an enthusiast. For me, I don't ever see this flying at any company that I work with where it's a numbers game.
Yeah.
Yep. And you just want to write it, especially for something like the Glyph where it is so hyper-specific to just a handful of devices. Like, it's interesting, and I think it would be fun to do proofs of concepts that might inspire other people, but but, you know, Godspeed to whoever does want to do it. I do think it's like, there's a lot of opportunity there, but it's a hard sell.
It's the snake eating its own tail, right? Like it's not, unless people adopt it or like start adopting the phone, and it's like we talked about with tablets, unless there's enough of a movement in a direction,
chicken and egg,
it doesn't make the return on investment, you know, like Michelle said, you know, valuable. Definitely not in the U.S. Like, you know, I think nothing is a very, very big hill to climb in the U.S. You know, I don't know what the adoption has been in Europe, but it seems like they've been mainly focused on Europe and more, and even then in the style side of things, which is even a smaller niche of a niche. I'm curious to see what comes out of it, though. We'll see. So,
I mean, if it was like an open, some kind of like open spec, open SDK, where you could conceivably apply, you know, the time and effort to another phone.
Yeah.
Sure, but that doesn't seem like the nothing style. Like they thrive on the uniqueness and their particular flavor of mobile. So,
yep.
Indeed.
Not to be like, you know, Debbie Downers rain on the parade. Nothing Burger. Yeah. Rain on the parade. But
all right, well, pick us back up then, Rajami.
Well, how about a watch? How about to go with your mid-range nothing phone, a mid-range Xiaomi watch? So this is not actually officially announced by Xiaomi yet, but people have been noticing that a Xiaomi Watch 2, now this is in contrast to the Xiaomi Watch 2 Pro. So anyway, this Xiaomi Watch 2 has been popping up on retail sites in Europe. Yeah, it's kind of, I'm not sure how that happens, retail sites, but no official word from Xiaomi, but it is going to be a more affordable version of the Xiaomi Watch 2. In fact, a very similar, basically, other than a few things. So the Xiaomi Watch 2 Pro versus the Xiaomi Watch 2, as detailed on these like little premature retail site listings, are very similar. The Xiaomi 2 watch is looking to be priced between 199 euro and 219 euro, and that is in contrast to the Pro, which is like between 270 330 euro. And they're very, very similar. The design is about the same. The only thing is that, of course, being a more, you know, kind of mid-rangey watch model, there are going to be some compromises to be made. And the biggest of those is going to be the fact that while the Xiaomi Watch 2 had a rotating bezel, the Xiaomi Watch 2 Pro had a rotating bezel. The Xiaomi Watch 2 does not, and it will be made of aluminum versus stainless steel. But I mean, other than that, it's basically the Xiaomi Watch 2 Pro, same specs, same size, same display, water resistance, even the same processor. They're both allegedly, I guess, on the side of the Watch 2, but supposedly using the Snapdragon W5 Plus Gen 1. Same sensors. And I mean, and if we go by everything else, the Xiaomi Watch 2 Pro was running Wear OS 3.5. So probably could a decent guess that it's probably going to be all the mid-range version will also be running the Wear OS 3.5. So yeah, like if you are in the mood for a Xiaomi watch, but want to get one just a little bit more affordable range of price, keep an eye out for the Xiaomi Watch 2, which maybe Xiaomi will actually officially talk about it at some point, other than like letting it kind of just, you know, slide under the radar at retail stores.
You can still go to this listing at Keskenkello in Finland, I think, and buy it.
Yeah. Not available. You can't actually buy it. Yeah, it's listed.
Oh, I can't actually read it, so I don't know if I can actually buy it. Here, I'll do Google Translate. There we go. Room.
Oh dear. Jeez. Translate.
Oh, temporarily out. Okay. At least it says that. I can read that.
Very interesting.
Okay. Well,
again. Very attractive. And about, let me see, what's the math on that? At least
219.
At least 70 euro cheaper than the Watch 2 Pro.
Okay.
So there you go. Keep an eye out. It's got to be there. It's like a listing in for it. There's information about it already. Just need Xiaomi to acknowledge it. And then we can move forward.
And then to stock it.
And to stock it so you can actually buy one. That is important. Fair enough.
All right. That was hardware. Now we've got apps. We did have two app stories, but we already told you about it.
Jumped the gun on one. Yeah.
So that's okay. It got in there. It was just a little bit earlier. It totally fit into the story we were talking about earlier. So that makes sense. But what else do we have? Apparently, I am on the things getting minor redesigns beat, because not only did YouTube Music get that design change, but Google Maps is getting some redesigns, some redesigned elements. And I don't know. I mean, they're not insignificant. They're just not major. But, you know, again, I think what it comes down to is kind of like a rounding of the edges. Also kind of revealing a little bit more. This is like the current layout that we're seeing on the video view when you're looking at kind of your directions view, your search results view. The map gets covered entirely by your results. Oh, things are,
trust me, you know, crazy. A little bit
blockier and everything. The redesign kind of rounds things out. The search bar itself isn't, you know, taking up the whole third of the screen. Now it's like a little pill search bar overlaid, so you actually see the map behind it. Same with your results. Same with the kind of like the cards view down here if you're actually looking at a map. And that's just one aspect. There's also your actual directions are getting a little bit of a change along the same lines, right? Instead of being kind of like this overall, you know, taking over the entire screen with information, which actually makes it feel incredibly dense with information, sometimes gives your eyes, you know, a challenge as far as like what to actually look at. Now they're starting to kind of let a little bit of that map creep through in different ways. And, you know, I do think that that actually helps your eye to know kind of what are the places that I should be looking at. What is the information that I need right now? And it just kind of cleans up the view. This is the modern design aesthetic. And 3 years from now, we'll look at this and go, oh my God. But right now, it's new and fresh.
They just keep tinkering. And I'm glad that they're fixing it because it's been driving me crazy lately about like the number of things. Yeah, the number of things that just want to, you know, like I just want to know where I'm getting. And then all of a sudden, like stuff is covering, like you said, like the search result is covering the map. And especially when you're driving, it's such a functional need. So I'm glad that they are addressing that. So.
Yep. Yeah. Well, that's not all, Ron.
No, it's not.
Because also in Maps, you will get this tiny little collar.
Goodness gracious.
That's cool. I like that. I mean, that's neat.
It is cool. Make it bigger, for goodness sake.
Well, no, because if it's too big, it's covering results, yeah, right?
True. Like, I guess. But
I got to see it in context on the phone. I got to see it in context to see if it's bigger enough. But I like that. That's not it's subtle. I like it. Nowcast. So it's
very subtle.
Yeah.
But yeah, you get your temperature of the, I'm assuming of the area that you're looking at, and then the AQI, the air quality index of that area as well. So that's kind of an overlay.
Oh, it's too small.
That's the world we live in now.
It does feel a little too small. I mean, if it was a graphic, if it was like the layer graphic, then fine. But it's but there's actual information in there. And I think from an accessibility standpoint, like don't go much smaller than, you know, these other buttons that have wording on it. Like that's tiny, the 224 AQI. But I get it. They don't want to cover up the map. Yep. So there you go. Is there anything else? I think that's about it. Oh, this is just like, you know, you get expanded information if you tap it. So you actually get the weather in the areas.
Everybody loves weather.
Pop out.
It makes sense. Weather and maps, weather the works. Two evergreen things that we always love. But
yeah, I bet if we threw this in as a Patreon pick, it would have won.
It would have won.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, totally.
Which is why we didn't. Too easy. We want to make it easy on people.
Oh, everybody wanted their YouTube music news.
I know. Well, Jason, while you were going over the maps, we did have a little, it's not breaking news, but we had a late addition into the apps that Michelle's going to tell us about quickly, though. So,
So if you use any application that invokes the Android system photo picker that was introduced first in Android 13 and then backported to Android 11 and later, you can finally select photos or videos that were stored online on your Google Photos account. So previously, any apps that use the photo picker, like, for example, the new Gemini for Android app. Like, if you open Gemini for Android and you select the camera icon and then you tried to import a photo, that uses the Android photo picker. Before today, you could only select photos and videos that are stored locally on your Android device. But starting with the rollout of the February 2024 Google System update, and available on Android 12 and later, the photo picker is getting cloud media provider integration, starting with the Google Photos app. So apps that integrate this API that allows them to be set as a cloud media provider can be shown in the photo picker so that you can select them in whatever apps are invoking the photo picker, whether or not that be like Google Keep, the Messages app, Google Chat, and any other app that uses it. Previously, you know, like it was very limited. Like if you stored your memes, your camera rolls, everything was stored locally, you could select it through the photo picker. But if you had anything else that was available only through online cloud media storage like Google Photos, you couldn't select that. But for now, finally, you can. And this is an open API, so other third-party apps like OneDrive, for example, could integrate with the Android photo picker, although Google is kind of using an allowless system. So like you can't just be any developer and have your app be integrated with this photo picker. You have to actually work with an OEM and have the OEM nominate your app. I guess the reason they're doing it is because for security, so that you don't have like, you know, like random images being inserted into the photo picker. I'm not exactly entirely sure why they're limiting in such a way, but that's the way it is right now. And if you're using Google Photo, at least, this will begin rolling out soon.
Cool.
How are you feeling about this win? Because I know photo pickers are near and dear to your heart.
Yeah, they are. It's a step in the right direction. So that is a thing, is that the big thing with photo picker is that, sorry, I was way away from my mic. The big thing about photo picker is that it is a more secure way for you to share photos with an app without having to give them full permission to all of your photos on your device. And so that is a thing. And one of the kind of big reasons to that probably was just not a good reason to switch to is that it didn't support cloud, and now it does. And looking at the post, what does make me feel a little bit like, oh, I wish it was more, is that it looks like from the cloud provider is a radio button rather than like a check, so it seems like you only have one provider at a time. Like, just from looking at the UI, I don't know. I only just read this now. And that makes me unhappy because I don't know about anybody else, but I have a lot of different, you know, media providers, file providers on my phone. I've got Dropbox, I've got Drive, I've got Photos, I've got other things. So I'd like to see how this shakes out. I mean, it's definitely a step in the right direction. And it is weird, Michelle, as you said, for them to kind of more or less whitelist it. That's probably a better phrase than using that, but basically kind of like having it be a little bit gated like this, because there's already like a whole system on Android where, you know, any app can say, hey, I can provide you files, I can provide you media. And granted, that it might not align with the new API, but
you're totally right. It does feel like they're kind of reinventing the wheel a bit. Like the old the system file picker that this whole photo picker is replacing, that already supported integrating with Google Photos,
it just didn't look
with
great.
Google Drive, with like
everything.
There was already an API and existing integrations with that.
Yeah.
All that basically needed was like an updated UI and like kind of just specific filtering for photos and videos. But instead, we have this entirely new independent system that apps have to specifically add support for again. And over a year after it launched, we're finally getting integration with Google's own Photos app. So like when are we going to get other apps? Like, who knows?
Yeah. And that's the thing though, is like, I kind of ranted about, you know, apps like Instagram and stuff kind of making their own pickers and them being just like poor, but they're poor for the same reason the photo picker was poor, is that you can only see photos on your device, and you should just make it easier for people to just be able to have access to all their media, cloud or not. And again, step in the right direction. Still a little, this is like what I said about first impressions, like this is not going to get people to switch over to photo picker right away, in my opinion, but I don't know. Ooh.
Shall we move on into email or
yes,
I'll happily take the first one.
Yeah, take the first one.
Yeah, so our first email comes in from Blake in Texas, who wrote into contact@androidfaithful.com. We love to hear from you. Please send your emails. Blake says, hello to the entire Android Faithful team. After using Galaxy devices for over 5 years, I decided to switch to the Pixel 8 Pro. Overall, I enjoy it and love not having two app stores to update. However, one thing I would love to replicate is the modes and routines it had. When I would connect the Bluetooth in my car, it would automatically update the Bluetooth volume on my Galaxy to 80%, so I almost never had to adjust my car volume. And then he goes on to say in the second there, in the Pixel settings, the only available rules are for do not disturb and changing the ringer settings. Are you aware of any other app or tool to automatically change the volume similar to Samsung? It's useful functionality that I hope Pixel will adopt. I've been Team Android since my HTC Evo 4G, and I wouldn't have it any other way. It's great listening to y'all every week, so thank you for sharing your passion and enthusiasm. And thank you, Blake, for writing in. Wynn, you had some suggestions about this to software. Yeah.
I didn't know. I was trying to look for this, and I couldn't find anything that was like specifically about Bluetooth volume. I did see that, you know, way back in Android 6, that Android, or Google rather, introduced absolute volume, which is a feature meant to sync volume on your phone and Bluetooth devices for you. Of course, when someone does something for you, there's a good chance that, you know, they will do it in a way that you don't like. And there actually is a slew of articles and tips out there, even today in 2024, about turning it off. And this actually requires you turning on developer mode, which is not that hard. But that kind of goes to show you about, like, you know, I think it requires developer mode. But anyway, what you can do is, you know, maybe try turning off absolute volume, and maybe if you do that, the individual device volume will be retained between connections. And I do think it does require developer mode, but, and if I can just get trees to scroll.
Yeah, my suggestion would be a third-party automation app like Tasker or Automate. Just envisioning in my mind, this is probably one of the simpler like automations you could set up. Just when connected to Bluetooth device, whatever your Bluetooth device is called in your car, then change volume to 80%. And then when disconnect, restore volume. Like, pretty simple. You don't have to do much of anything to set it up. But the challenge is the UI, like figuring out how the UI works. But there are some apps that make it really simple. It's basically like a block diagram. I think like Automate on Google Play is one of them, where it's just like you connect blocks together. Makes it much more
like IFTT.
Intuitive
to use. IFTT. I tried IFTT. It doesn't allow you to set it. It allows you to turn up the volume, but not for a Bluetooth device. It's just the phone volume, which.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I don't know if that's the challenge in having an app manage Bluetooth device IDs and then actually remembering per one. So barring that, if you can't do that, try turning that off. Developer options, go to settings, and then go to systems menu and try turning off absolute volume. Maybe that'll work. But yeah, you'd think this was a thing, but apparently not.
Yeah. I will say on behalf of the legions of people who find Tasker to be completely intimidating, it is attractive to either have it be baked into the OS or have it have like a simple app to do it. Now, I agree with you, Michelle, like it's probably one of the simpler Tasker ones, but I understand some people have hesitation for that. So, yeah. Oh, well, something Samsung does that the Pixel doesn't do as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. Michelle, you got the next email.
That's right. We got an email from Stealth Dave, who is wanting to tell us about the Photosphere option. So I've been a big fan of this Photosphere option on Google's camera app for quite a while now, and I've been very dismayed with recent news that the Photosphere option might be disappearing on newer phones. So I was thrilled over the weekend when I opened the camera on my Pixel 7 to find the Photosphere right there next to the panorama. This is the Photosphere that I took at the top of the Eagle Canyon run at Mammoth Mountain, California on Saturday.
Yeah, and I'm working on it. Sorry, I didn't have that.
Keep reading the email, though.
Loaded. Yeah, keep going.
What I was really impressed with was how well my Pixel 7 was able to stitch the photos together into a seamless canvas. I've taken Photospheres on a variety of phones, and while always impressive, there was always some visible tearing at the seams. But the Pixel 7, presumably with some help from its machine learning-focused processor, it really feels like the photo was taken with a single, magical, sphere-like camera lens. Love the new show, and thrilled to have the whole AAA gang back together. Keeping the faith, Stealth Dave.
Yeah, thanks, Stealth. This looks really Dave good.
Photosphere lives.
There's a little bit of a tear right there.
Yeah.
It does feel weird that they're getting rid of like 360 degree photos at a time when it's making a comeback with VR, and then Google and Samsung are going to release sometime soon, hopefully, their AR glasses. So like this would actually be kind of useful to have a bunch of these photos to experience in.
Maybe that's space, maybe someone just realized. Oh, our bad, undelete.
Our bad. It's like when they got rid of Android Beam, and then Apple is like, "Hey, we got Android Beam on iPhones, but prettier now."
Yeah. Nice. I forgot about Photospheres. It's been a long time since I took a Photosphere. That's for sure.
Well, it's nice to see that it's not dead yet.
Yeah,
so.
Not dead yet. Thank you, Stealth Dave, for that email. And finally, Dave, different Dave, I think, or it's Stealth Dave, but not stealthy.
Not as stealthy.
Dave in Virginia Beach says, let me see here, get the email up for you. Hi, Android Faithful team. Congrats, Jason, for a great theme song. Thank you, Dave. Just one question. I know the music has the word Android before it drops the full beat, but the synth voice says something beforehand, something like activate, What's the word? This cracked me up. Really? Really? See, I hear it every time, but you know, I made the song. It says Android Faithful. Android Faithful.
I thought it was very clear that it was Faithful as well too, but maybe because I hear it all the time.
I also hear it all the time.
It, I think.
And I, yeah.
Well, no, but it says something like it says the it's before it drops the full beat, but the synth voice says something beforehand. I know the music has the word Android, something like activate. Is it Faithful or is there anything? Are there any other words in that song, Jason? Is it just nope. Android Faithful?
Nope.
So it's Faithful. It's just, there you go. There's your
answer. And there's the Android, which is the thing yeah. that Dave, I think, is
that
talking
might
about.
Be the activate that, that might be the activate he's thinking of, is the guttural Android.
It says before, no, before the drop.
He right. says, I love how we're deciphering this. I know the music has the word Android before it drops the full beat, which is true. Android. but the synth voice, the only synth voice in there says something beforehand, something like activate, but it's Android.
You know, we're going to play this song in like a minute from now, so we could keep our ears open for that.
Let's see here. Is it possible to like play this and skip forward? I think I probably can. Here,
no, I think you can.
No, you can't?
No, you can't. But
you
we can
skip
the whole thing.
Forward?
Yeah, I know. It's frustrating.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
Yeah.
Never mind.
You'll just stay tuned to the end. That's a good excuse to wrap it up. All right. So email us at contact@androidfaithful.com. We do love to hear from you. Keep the good emails coming in. We want to pull the curtain and tell you about everything that there is. that's going to wrap it up for Android Faithful number 31. Thank you so much for listening. You guys are all the best. Before we go, Jason, tell everyone about the world of Jason Howell.
Yeah. Well, I think if I'm going to point any everyone, I feel like I have so many different things that I'm pointing people to and that it might be confusing. Right now, I'm really working on getting some regular kind of reviews content up on my YouTube channel. So go to yellowgoldstudios.com. That's a redirect. That'll take you to youtube.com/@ Yellow Gold Studios. And right now, if you go there, you're just going to find episodes. I say just as if it's lesser than, but it's actually pretty awesome. You're going to find all the episodes of AI Inside, including new one recording tomorrow, all of the episodes in video. And then I'm going to be throwing some videos up there here. Hopefully by the end of this week, I'm going to have a review of the OnePlus Open. I know it's a little late, but I'm going to do my review treatment on that. And that's kind of like my test case for what my reviews are going to be going forward. And then I've got a bunch of other devices that I'm going to be reviewing in the future. So go to yellowgoldstudios.com. That's all I have to say about that.
All right. Well, Wynn, quickly, while you're here, where can people find you?
Android dev, rant about things like the photo picker. Not exactly, but other things like that. Find me at randomlytyping.com, talks, things like that. And find me at QuidComMonkey, really just on Instagram, but, you know, maybe other places.
And Michelle, where can people find you to get the latest on Android 15?
Oh, yeah. Now's a great time to follow me if you want to find out what's coming on Android 15, because as we said earlier this show, Android 15 is likely dropping on Thursday. So if you want to find out what's new, follow me on Twitter, X, Mastodon, Threads, whatever, at Michelle Ramon. And if you want to support my work and chat with me and others on my Discord group, you can go to patreon.com/MichelleRamon, and we'll be chatting about Android 15 for weeks and months to come, because there's so much to dig into.
Yep, months indeed. Very cool. Well, thank you, Michelle. And for me, you can follow me on social media. I'm at RonXO across all the stuff. You can find me. I'm easy to find. But I will say, do us a favor. Tell your friends about the show. Write a review. Spread the word. If you know people who listen to podcasts on Spotify, tell them to listen to the show. Because we're really good on every other platform but Spotify for some reason.
That's interesting.
That. Yeah, it really is. I thought we'd be higher on Spotify, about. But we're not. But anyway, a lot of people, we're very big on Pocket Cast. That's all I'll say. We're very, very big on podcast.
So, it makes sense.
Does make sense. But yeah, please, you know, help spread the word. You guys are our biggest supporters, and we really appreciate that. So let people know. You can find everything at androidfaithful.com. And that's going to wrap it up this week. And like I mentioned, over at androidfaithful.com, you can find links to subscribe to the show on all the various platforms. You can find a link to go support us on Patreon at patreon.com/androidfaithful. You can email us, do all the stuff. It's all there at androidfaithful.com. We love you all for tuning in. We record the show every Tuesday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, and then we release the podcast shortly thereafter, and you can watch the replay on YouTube. And until next week, this has been Android Faithful, and we'll see you next time. Have a happy Valentine's Day, everybody. We love you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.